Good morning and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Kay from Chicago, Illinois. I'll be the host for the presentation today. Today is Sunday, March 22nd, 2026. And I have the share ID numbers for Friday, March 20th, for the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting. That number is 23,302. That's 23302. And the 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting on Friday, 23,303. That's 23303. This morning, A Vision for You presents Hearing God's Power Through the 12 Steps. So we're going to hear our presenter. She's going to share her personal story of transformation as a result of the 12 Steps. Looking forward to that. You know, I would suggest to you that recovery really is a radical act of love. You know, mm-hmm. there's like a radiant warmth in the sunlit heart that just comes alive. And the beauty of love is much like the sun, I think, in that it radiates in all directions. It radiates, it shines both inwardly and outwardly. And, you know, we come here in contrast, of course, trying to apply our own willpower to this disease. Well, that was doomed to failure because the sunlight of the spirit was blocked. And, you know, when there's an internal war, really, between my own desires, you know, willpower could help me, probably does help me win a few of the battles, if you will, in the short run. But considering the vicious cycle of this allergy giving way to the mental obsession and on and back and forth and back and forth, in the long run, it's going to fail every time. My willpower will fail every time. And that's why I need a relationship with power. And the 12 steps were designed to bring about the level of change necessary to, among other things, drive out the mental obsession, a higher power that I may even have trouble believing in. Really, through the steps, paves the way for this change to happen. And you know, maybe you've heard, we uncover, we discover, and we discard ultimately what had been blocking us from the power source. And when we are brought into alignment with our Creator, the Big Book offers a description of what happens in the Big Book. Among other things, it says all ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding dominant force in our lives, are replaced by a new set of ideas, a new set of emotions and attitudes. We got that from Dr. Jung, you know, meeting with Roland Hazard. And since all action is born in thought, when these steps result in an internal restructuring, our actions will never be the same. Our actions become congruent with God's will for us. And you know, as long as we stay in fit spiritual condition, this thing happens as naturally, as organically, as the rhythm of your heartbeat, you know? And when we cross the bridge to freedom, well, we cannot help but feel profound gratitude. In some sense, we are reborn. Now, joining us this morning to share her journey in navigating through these very 12 steps and undergoing a spiritual transformation is Anne SCH from British Columbia, Canada. And in this case, Anne, if you're looking for her, she spells her first name A-N-N-E. So it's Anne SCH. We've got a lot of Anns. But this one's special, this Anne here. It's with much gratitude that we welcome Anne to the line this morning. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning, Larry. And good morning to all my fellows known and fellows yet to meet. I'm so pleased to be here to share my story. My qualifications are that my lowest size was a size 8, and my highest size was a size 28. My height, when I started my journey and when I was in my 30s, well, I was close to 6 feet tall. However, because of chaotic eating and binging, I lost 3 inches. I'm 3 inches shorter than I was then. My weight loss over My recovery journey has been over 120 pounds. I stopped weighing myself at one point, but let's just say it's that. And my abstinent date from my alcoholic foods is September 2015. So I've been coming to OA in various stages. I was not one of these people that hung in there and kept coming back in various forms for over 30 years. And I've been participating in the Vision for You since 2023. My name again is Anne, and I consider myself a recovered compulsive overeater. So the structure that I wanted to use for this expansive broad highway of doing the 12 steps is to personalize the step itself and read what I wrote for myself, because a teacher who is on this line, Harlan, said that you want to identify with the text. And so for me, I personalize the steps. And then I would like to give a reading from the big book, and that's like a reference with page number. And that way, it's like a trigger for me to bring like out my story. And then the story. So 1, 2, 3, step, big book reference, and story in that step. So because this, in all things OA and doing the steps, I put God as my foundation. And I like to say the third step prayer for myself and anybody else that wants to be on the line that wants to say it as well. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. So I admit even today that I'm powerless over food and that my life has become unmanageable. From the big book, page 13, the bottom of the page, the last sentence. Belief in the power of God plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain a new order of things were essential requirements. And then further down in that same page is the sense of victory. I fully accepted them. The effect was electric. There was a sense of victory followed by such peace and serenity. In my story, that took many years to acquire, but let's start with from, I first became aware of OA in real time when I had been recruited to work in South Florida out of Canada. And one of my coworkers would go to OA meetings, and she would come in and describe her meeting from the night before about the shares, about all the details. She didn't really talk about the steps, but she did talk about her weight and her struggles with food. And as I listened to her talk, I knew that there was somehow an answer for me in there about my food, because I had been now restricting and dieting for a couple of, maybe a let's call it a decade, was part of the culture. By the time I had arrived at these meetings in the office that weren't really meetings, but yeah, they were. I was in my late 30s, and I had already gone through 2 divorces and 1 very abusive, physically abusive relationship. And I was making chaotic choices around my foods, and that was, I think, a lot of the basis in my belief now, as I look back, for a lot of the chaos that was in my life. Because of my electrolytes and all the things that we know about now in terms of the calibration of the body, I was not living that. And in terms of like God was a fellow I knew about because I was raised in a parochial religious school from about grade 1 until about grade 11. I was, classes about God were first thing in the morning. But I walked away at 16. I didn't have a relationship with God. That would come, but not for a while. In step 2, I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. So on page 56 of the big book, under We Agnostics, There is like a paragraph that's at the very top of 56, where it talks about dogged by trouble, frustration, business failure, insanity, fatal disease, and suicide. These were part of my story in one form or another. And they were self-induced, a lot of them. They were self-induced. There was, because of life, and I'll explain what that is in my story, but the mental and physical collapse was there when I was 30 years old, and it went in various forms for a good 15 years until I was in my early 40s. In this particular page, it tells me the presence of God, the presence of infinite prayer and love. And for me, again, in the end of this paragraph, he had stepped from a bridge to shore. For the first time, he lived in conscious companionship with his creator. So for me, this is like stepping from an iceberg that I was floating on that was really unsteady. There was no anchorage. It was just simply floating, and every wave that came along, it was holding on for dear life. And somehow, through God and my, and I like to say working the steps, but working the steps came later. It was really my relationship with God and being encouraged to and family and friends to seek dry land. And that to me was the steps. That has really actualized in my life. So when my second marriage ended, I had an emotional breakdown and a mental and physical collapse. The admitting hospital psychiatrist was later criminally charged for sexually assaulting intake of women that he was intaking. And the memory of this meeting with him could have gone horribly wrong if it weren't for the presence of God and the presence of an infinite power of love. Now, I debated about including that story because the memory only came up when I was preparing this talk. And I just took it to God, and my sense is that this is a story of when I had this memory, I did the work with God about it, the feelings I had around it. But there was somehow a turning point in this, because after this particular meeting, I was able to face down this kind of oppression coming from an authority. Remember, I was 6 feet tall, and I was an angry woman and not doing well because I'm admitted to a mental facility. And I think he just looked at me and realized that I could take him out. But that's another story, even though I wasn't heavy at the time. I had been molested by a group of neighborhood boys at the age of 5. And by the grace of God, one of the boys' father came upon the scene and was able to stop what was going on before any real damage was done. But the memory stayed with me because there had been some kind of safety issue that had been broken, a boundary had been broken. It wasn't until about 25 years later when I re-met the perpetrator of this, the leader of this group of kids. And the memory of that set off an incredible cycle of trauma, because it reignited something that I thought I had, you know, like that stage in my life kept pushing it back. So my eating became chaotic, but because of restricting and dieting, you know, going to all the panways and everything, it just, the chaos was there. And so in therapy, because I now was in therapy because I was admitted, there was no God, but there was a presence of God that was all around me. And I see that now looking back. It was in a physically abusive relationship that this chaos around food and addictions to foods and other things, that there was a mental and physical collapse. A pattern that was, I could see the pattern developing, like, oh my gosh, I'd come from a stable and home environment, relatively for the times, we're talking the 60s and early 70s, and God was with me and I just didn't know it. So as I'm acting out and in rebellion and trying to make sense of all this life, I left a path of destruction and heartache for many people in my family and friends. And I knew better, but I couldn't find a door out of this mess. I tried returning to the religion of my childhood, but there was no heart connection. Again, there was that disconnect. There wasn't a relationship. I just wanted a relationship, and didn't seem to be one there. So in step three, I decided to make a decision to turn my will over to, in my life, over to the care of God as I understood him. So in the big book, page 63, How It Works, it's the second paragraph on 63. And again, it's like that, the prayer that I just read at the very beginning, the bondage of self. That bondage of self, when I first read that prayer, it was in an OAA, it was by the front door of an OAA meeting I went to in a very small church on the west side of Vancouver. And this was the first time I had seen the third step prayer. And the impact was enormous, just enormous on me, because it wasn't part of the meeting. It was just something that was on the wall, so to speak. So how this God has worked in me is that I'm now in my late 30s, and after a chaotic decade of dieting and geographical careers all over North America, in one city, I was moving every 3 months. I was exhausted, and after this period of time, I returned home to Vancouver. But my body was no longer able to drop weight the same way it changed. So the binging had caught up with me. I wasn't able to lose it anymore. This is a pretty common story I know from meetings, but it's part of my story. So because of the woman that I had talking about OA meetings, I knew there was a solution. It was just simply, this was like the last step, go to an OA meeting. It was close to my house. And we read from the big book, which in retrospect now is amazing, because in reading from the big book, we passed around the book and took turns reading. And I had trouble identifying with alcoholic and wanted to replace the language with alcoholic foods when we read the story. And then when we read the story about how Evie got religion, that to me was like, oh my gosh, if that's the solution, I'm going to go back to church. So I found a church that somebody knew about and started going back. And it got an OA pamphlet, started weighing and measuring my food. This was before digital scale, so it was kind of frustrating. But went to meetings and had a fellowship, like the faith community I started to establish. And I actually got what would probably be, I would describe now as abstinence. I wasn't necessarily working the steps, but I was working the steps because I was going to meetings. The sponsor that I had, she was great. She was originally from AA, and she would give me Joe and Charlie tapes to listen to. And so that guided me through in terms of what I now know as my alcoholic foods, which you talked about in a vision for you. She helped me identify what those alcoholic foods were. And then later, there's now husband number three. But because I was now doing steps 1, 2, 3, but wasn't doing the rest of the steps, the literature changed, things in my life changed, getting married or moving in with a fellow who I eventually married after many years. But relationship problems with my boyfriend, I was still living in that chaotic place. People at church eventually persuaded me that the relationship was emotionally abusive. And I learned later that they were based very much on legitimate reasons. I continued to go to meetings, and I talked to my sponsor weekly, and I stayed abstinent from my alcoholic foods for about 3 years. But I also moved to a different community, still in the Lower Mainland, but you know, a good hour away, one drive one way. And I was not doing any work beyond a step three. The foundation of those meetings, though, stayed with me for a long, long time because I remember them. But I didn't take, like, you know, when you start going back here and there, like the food that I fell off on was, it was a nutritional supplement that was marketed in the form of a caramel candy and advertised as being calcium. So my sponsor dropped me. But I was in a stall, and I knew about steps four and five because they were read out at meetings. But I had an incredible fear about asking somebody to take me through. And when I look back, I mean, how do I know, like, taking somebody's inventory? Perhaps my sponsor just didn't feel it was overwhelming for her to take anybody through. Anyway, that's where it was. So step four, I made a searching and fearless moral inventory of myself. So this is like going to page 66 to 67, the very bottom of the page of 66. This is, of course, we realize that the people who had wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. So we did not like their symptoms and the way that they disturbed us. They, like ourselves, were sick too. We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I help? Be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. And then further on that same page is column four. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set the matter straight. So I lost my sponsor, and I was now living in a different community. And I became a spiritual orphan. So I also disconnected from church. And so there was like a 15-year binge in my 50s. I say that because once I had went off, it was kind of like that in Larry's introduction. There was sort of like a turning inwards of, this, I guess, just self-hate. That would be the only way I can describe it. I knew the answer, but I somehow got deeper and deeper into the food, and I became more and more angrier and bitter, and the carnage was devastating. I stopped weighing myself when I was at about 120 pounds. And above my normal weight or my ideal weight is recommended by a doctor. I was in full rebellion, isolated and miserable. My weekends were spent binging and sleeping and quite often missing work on the Monday morning because of a food hangover. You know, constantly the doctor would be diagnosing me with having gastritis. And so that would be a couple of days in bed at home. And this is all related to overeating. And there was a psychiatrist that I was seeing at the time, and he decided that the way for me to go forward was to go back to one of the pain ways, Weight Watchers. And I resisted. And I said, no, I want to do a 12-step program. That's the only way for me. And his wife was a psychiatric leader of a food disorder clinic across the street at the major hospital in the city. But this was his way of, you know, I was the experiment. But he dropped me too. And the reason he dropped me is because he could look at my face when I saw him and could see the bloat around my skin, the bloat on my chin. Like I could look at my body myself and I could see the consequences now of every binge. So around this time, my father and mother's health began to deteriorate. And they were living in a different city, close by again, but a tunnel away. And I moved closer to them. I'm now in my early 60s, and I quit my job, and I sold my condo. And I started attending a small face-to-face OA meeting. I found a food sponsor online who was part of a different food fellowship. who I gave my food to each day by email. And she and I are still in contact 11 years later. Once I put down my alcoholic foods, a fellow in OA, a member in this face-to-face meeting, suggested we start sharing the big book together and that we go through the steps. She and I met together once a week, and I would study the steps, and I would do reading some literature. And unfortunately, in that process, steps 10, 11, and 12, the actions that was required in those steps, I did not know what to do with them because there was no one else in the meeting that was doing that work. And she didn't know either. So although I was absent from my alcoholic foods, because I got absent while we were doing this work and found this sponsor, I was not recovered as I know recovery now. So as part of the process, though, in step five, I admitted to God, to myself, and to another human being the exact nature of my wrongs. I went to see the pastor of the church where we were meeting and asked her if she would take my fifth step or my fourth step, and that she was my fifth step in terms of taking it. So page 75, the second paragraph, into action. We park in our pride, and we can do alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin a spiritual experience. We feel we are on a broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. So that broad highway for me was extensive, spacious, and wide. And this was probably initially when I think, look at the scope of things, when I look back, it was one of my fears was to do a fourth step. And think about this. I was afraid of doing a fourth step, and here I am telling you details of my life that a lot of my friends don't even know, that think they know me. And so, like, I share parts of my story, but they don't know my whole story. You're hearing amazing, probably for the first time. So this is like I'm working the program by talking here. So the lady passed, she was very gracious. I felt safe with her. The Spirit of God did give me a new peace and ease. I was absent and feeling hopeful about life for the first time in decades. And I was beginning to seek that depth in relationship with God, that I wanted to know God, and I was hungry to know God. So not so hunger for food, no, hunger to know God's ways, who he was, and develop a relationship and that would increase more and more. So now in step six, again on the wall, I'm entirely ready to have God remove all my defects of character, negative behaviors. And I humbly ask you, God, to recover, to remove my shortcomings. So in doing this message, and this is like what amazes me, is that I really dug into these two steps because it's very similar to emotional healing that I've been doing work with God on now. It's like surrender my shortcomings to God. First step, first A, point A, surrendering my shortcomings to God and humbly ask him to remove them. Are action steps that I constantly need to remind myself of when I remember to seriously do the transaction with God of making myself ready and then asking. It's like God taking away a thorn, lifting it out of me. But mouthing the words mindlessly, casually by rote, in my experience, doesn't work for me. I really need to focus. And then when I'm reminded of how powerful that step six is to identify And step seven is to ask to remove one of the most, the issue of my, whatever is that, that I need emotional healing. So that removal I need to ask for. But there seems to be something about doing it all very concisely. Identify the emotion, take it to God, wait, and hold on to it, and then go back and look, is that emotion still there? And it has released a lot of healing for me, that removal. So step eight and nine is deflation and restitution. I made a list of all the people I had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. The list of people that I made was, the list was short, only because my mind was totally blocked from wanting to even go there and look at the people, the probably hundreds of people that I had impacted in negative ways with my compulsive behavior around food. And that I did deal with the people that were closest to me, family, and the friends that were there in talking with, in writing out my list. So this was something that I was able to do in more detail in more recent time when I got a sponsor through A Vision for You. I started the work during the time that I first started the steps by apologizing. But actually doing the amends and understanding what the amends was, I did understand, but had a greater understanding in more recent time. And this is like page 76, third paragraph. In the center of the paragraph, repair the damage. But the key phrase for me is, remember, it was greed at the beginning. We would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. So I was now, I was more than ready to go to any lengths to have a victory over my compulsive overeating and my alcoholic foods. My aging parents became my fat focus because I had retired. I was closer to them. I moved about two blocks away from their home. But, when I moved closer to them, I was a passenger, and we would go to across the U.S.-Canadian border and go shopping in a small town in the northern part of Washington State. And my father would be the one that would love to go because he liked the coupons and the fact of getting a discount on everything that he bought, a veteran's discount for all his purchases. And he would sit with the other veterans in the coffee room and they would talk. So it was a community for him. So eventually, though, as his health failed and my mother's health deteriorated, it was me driving across the border. And because this was his, it was like a holiday. So what I did was I realized in doing the steps for the first time that it would have to be a living amends. So I made a verbal amends, but I also made a living amends. So they're now in their 90s, and I found myself, the living amends was advocating for them with healthcare authorities, family members, visiting them frequently, all the time. Communicating with my siblings any changes or problems that arise. And I did this living amends. And when we arrived in the care facility, one of the aides asked me, "What did you do?" The implication being this, what kind of living hell did you put your parents through to be so out of care? And I thought, wow, she picked up right away. So perceptive that I had put myself there. But I loved it. I got to know them better. I got to know who they were as people. I didn't know who they were as people. So they lived until the ages of 96 and 98. My mother had dementia for over a 14-year period. And a year before her passing, she did a wake up out of her locked brain. And we had conversations together for about 2 weeks. This is God's miracle. First question she asked me, and it was very clear. She said, do I have enough money? I said, oh, yeah, you have enough money. So this had been on her mind for, 14 years that she was locked in her brain. Who knew? And there were other things that came up. So doing a living amends, there were things there that was where there was a lot of growth for me in terms of coming to the past, in terms of coming to terms with it. So in step 9, I made a direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. The last paragraph, or on page 76, the last sentence on 76, again, same quotes, repair the damage. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol, my alcoholic foods. So this is my example for this was that the story of I would visit my mother frequently during the week, and I would pack foods that I wouldn't remember her enjoying. And those were foods that were alcoholic foods to me. So very clearly I can remember hand feeding her all these foods because she was not able to feed herself. She was at that stage of her disease. And my hands would be smothered with sticky sugar. Smother, smother, smother. And it was all I could do. It wasn't like a panic or anything. It was just simply like, I need to wash my hands. How am I going to do this without getting sugar and sticky stuff all over the doorknob? But there was God's victory in that. And that I was, God's victory is that I was absent during the whole time of their party. And so there were no mixed tastes or bites because that had been well infused in me in those meetings way, way back. So the memory was there. Muscle memory was there. I guess you call it cellular memory. So now in terms of the next part was in step 10, I didn't really activate step 10 until coming back into a vision for you and later in Scottsdale as well. Because I didn't really, I understood it. I remember it being there, but now I had guidance. I had instruction in going back into the big book. And how did I get there? Well, step 10, I continued to take personal inventory, and when I was wrong, promptly admitted it. So page 84 in the big book. There, you know, the center of the paragraph there is selfishness, dishonesty, and resentment and fear. And my story is that in the summer of 2023, something fell off for me. My parents had been passed away for a good year. But I was not, and I was settling their estate, but I was absent from my alcoholic foods, and I was weighing and measuring. And I was reporting by email to my menu plan sponsor each night. But I felt really, really shaky. And I think the reason I was starting to feel shaky is I was starting to go back for more. And all the things that I had heard on a telephone meeting for this different fellowship that was other than OA, all the other people on the phone line were reporting the same feature. Until somebody identifies that volumizing was the issue. And I thought, well, if volumizing is the issue, that's overeating. That's what I'm doing. That was where the honesty is. I'm overeating. So, but out of that fellowship and a different from OA, and I spoke on the meeting about volumizing and wanting to stay away from what I didn't maybe I wasn't calling it alcoholic food, so it doesn't matter, but going for more. And when I described this on a meeting, someone in the meeting called me after speaking about volumizing. And we did a series of outreach calls together. And in that, she was the one that told me about a vision for you. So I started coming to meetings. She was being sponsored by somebody, and she was sharing the podcast from the Vision for You meetings with me. Even though she officially hadn't gone through as a sponsor, she was like stepping me through. So I took that volumizing and did a step one. Within the first 5 minutes of understanding what was going on, and I got totally abstinent just right away. So this was God again. But I recognized it then as food-related behavior. And now I would have that, the language of that this was a prelapse, the form of a prelapse. Through this wonderful fellow, I found Vision for You, pulled out my unused big book that had been sitting on my bookshelf for over 10 years. I bought it, and I put it on the bookshelf, never took it down. Have to say that it needs replacing because it's fallen totally apart, but that's another story. But this, the outreach fellow that I was describing here, she became my sponsor, and we did the steps quickly while I attended OA Big Book Focus meetings on Zoom and these conference calls. And out of that time, step 10, was I was introduced to the concept of sod roof, which is doing step 10 is when was I selfish, when was I dishonest, when was I resentful, and when was I afraid. And that was very efficient, very direct, and it was just the most marvelous thing. It was being a Vision for You shares on in September of 24 that outlines that technique. And it just worked for me. It continues to work. Yeah, miracles, actually. And I see it work in other people's lives. So again, I'm still under reconstruction. And then step 11. So step 11, through prayer and meditation, I seek to improve my conscious contact with God through His Word, praying only for knowledge of His will for me and the power to carry that out. So page 86, second paragraph. On awakening, we think about the next 24 hours ahead. So for me, this is being the on awakening paragraph is like a mental self-check. I ask myself as soon as I wake up, you know, am I feeling self-pity? Am I dishonest? Am I self-seeking about anything? And God shows me, and lo and behold, even though I might have done a nightly review, I need to do a 10th step. And we'll be calling Europe to do that, because they're the only people that are really awake and are offering themselves, because it's the middle of their day. So that is where my practice is now, is working 10, 11, and 12. But the reconstruction work that's being done through coming to meetings, Big Book Focus meetings in my life, it's been like the Spirit of God giving me a mental bath. When I was in my 40s, I came back to God. When I was in my 60s, I had a personal encounter with my Creator, the God Most High. But who knit me together in my mother's womb in my 70s is God, my healer, my provider, my deliverer, my comforter. And it's from the bondage itself. And in step 11, it teaches me to talk with God multiple times a day. It's like a continuous conversation. And I consider Jesus my higher power. So again, construction, reconstruction. I say this because some people on the line are going to feel offended, and I apologize for that, but this is so true for me, and I feel I need to say it. It is through Jesus Christ that by his death and resurrection, burial and resurrection, I've had a spiritual awakening as a result of these deaths. And I now try and carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all my affairs. And this is page 100 of the big book. Both you and the new man. This is sponsoring now. And when I sponsor, I declare that God is my higher power. And I have taken all kinds of people and all kinds of walks of life through the 12 steps. But you and a new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything he could have planned, we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. This is a promise that I am living as I work my program today. It is amazing to me. So I have a personal relationship with God. These steps are like a roadmap to a treasure. And the treasure gets the light of, like Bill W., he talks about the Father of Light on page 14 and create his creator. And this is like the light just gets brighter and brighter and brighter as I've just in doing the preparation for this talk. It's been the most wonderful experience. And I don't know, like I would like to close with a long version of the Serenity Prayer and say, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardship as a pathway to peace. Taking as Jesus did this sinful world as it is, not as I would have it. Trusting that you, God, will make all things right if I surrender to your will, so that I may have be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with you forever in the next. Amen. And with that, I pass, Larry.
Anne, thank you so much. We're so appreciative of just an authentic, straightforward presentation this morning. And thank you with so much gratitude. We extend back to you. So with that, a couple of things. First, let me give you the share ID for Anne's presentation. And I'll spell her first name again, A-N-N-E, last initials S-C-H, from British Columbia, Canada. And if you hang around for the at the end of the recorded portion, we will ask Anne for her contact information. But again, the share ID number for the presentation this morning is 23,304. That's 23304. So now let's transition to our Q&A. So if you happen to have a question for Anne, now's the time. Press star 1 to unmute your phone and give me your first name. And who has a question for Anne this morning?
Kiana in Ohio.
Ken W.
From Ohio, who was that again? I got you, Ken. From Ohio, who was that again?
Kiana W. from Ohio.
Kiana. Gotcha, Kiana. And then I got Ken W. H. Who else?
CK. CK in California.
CK.
Hana Yetta.
And gotcha, Hanayeta. Anybody else? Great opportunity for questions to pose. And star 1 to unmute. Okay, we've got Kiana, we've got Ken, CK, and Hanayeta, and we can circle back after that. We should have plenty of time. So let's start with a question from Kiana this morning. Kiana, good morning.
Good morning. This is Kiana from Akron, Ohio, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Thank you for your share and service today. My question is, would you mind repeating what step 10 guideline you used? You mentioned it, and I just wasn't able to catch it. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. The guideline was given to me by a fellow in the Scottsdale meeting. She created an acronym to remember the sequence as written in the big book. So the acronym is, first thing is selfish, next thing is dishonest, next thing is resentful, and then the next thing is fear. And so what she did is she created an acronym so that when you're, you know, for me anyway, when I'm feeling a certain way and can't think, I can just remember the acronym, which is SOD Ruth. S is selfish, D is dishonest, R is resentful, and F is fear or afraid. And she did a podcast on A Vision for You with another fellow in September of 24. So it'll be one of those podcasts in that area that describes it in more detail. And the magic and the sauce, so to speak, is the fact that it's in the big book and it follows a certain sequence. So I have found in taking 10 steps and then and doing them myself that there's something for me about the fact that it's coming written in the big book. There's just an actual sequence that's written there, that when I do a 10-step, it's very efficient. It's releasing. It does the work. And, so does that answer? I hope that answers your question. Kiana? Kiana?
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. And it was Kiana. Thanks, Kiana. And next up with the question is Ken W.H. Hey, Ken, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. This is Ken W.H., and thank you for your share. It specifically states in the big book that we do not apologize for God. And there are several capitalized words used for God. And I'm just going to simply say, please don't apologize for describing who your God is. And my question is rhetorical. Who am I to judge? Thanks for your share. Pass.
Oh, thank you, Ken. That's lovely. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Appreciate that, Ken. Yeah, you bet. Okay, next up we have CK, followed by Hanayeta. CK, it's your turn. Good morning.
Peace, family. This is CK in California. Thank you so much for your service this morning. It's a really great share. And I just wanted to know, in Bill's story on page 12, he said the word God still arose a certain antipathy. And, you kind of hit on this in your talk. You know, it's like a lot of people have trouble with the G word. And, for me personally, I do call my higher power God, but as I'm sponsoring now, I try to make it a point to, stress to my sponsees that it's your own conception of God. It's your own conception of a higher power. But there's sponsors here that want sponsees to believe exactly what they believe. And I just wanted to know, what is your message to sponsors force their will on the sponsee in terms of their ideas mm-hmm. of what a higher power should be. Like, what is your message for that, and how to bring people through the steps in a way that they can relate to and create their own conception?
What a beautiful question, CK. Thank you so much. I've learned. Because when I, that first initial meeting way back, maybe, I don't know, 30 years ago, it was announced at the meeting that my concept of God could be a doorknob. And that actually floored me. because that was like, wow, that's a pretty limited version of God. But if that works for people, okay. And but it wouldn't work for me. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, what will work for one will not necessarily work for all. And I've found through my own experience, mostly on the street, we're talking to people about God, that it's where you, I like to meet people where they're at. And I pray for my sponsees. I pray that they have a spiritual experience, that they have recovery, that they do the work. I support them that way in terms of my faith. But in terms of proselytizing to them beyond what my version is, I will, depends on the sponsee, but I'll say, if this is who my higher power is, it doesn't have to be yours. But I'm telling you that in case I start talking in a way that maybe, you know, like, just you need to know. Because I like to be able to be transparent with people when I'm talking with them. But do I push my agenda? No, because I don't think this is a place for that here in the meetings. If somebody comes to me and calls me, and people do, they to do a 10-step, I will not even go in there. Like, it depends on where they're at in terms of their own relationship with God. So it's really, I let God work through me, and I don't have to identify who God is to me, to another person. I just know God is present in our conversation. Like, God is present right now in this conversation. He's present in the meeting. He's already decided who's going to ask questions and what kind of questions they're going to ask. He's got this. I just showed up. And to me, that's what I do when I'm sponsoring. So, CK, in terms of your question, my message would be, is your, to any sponsor, is pray before you have a meeting with a sponsee. And hand them over to God and let God do the work.
Thanks, CK. Okay, Hanayeta, it's your turn. Good morning.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you so much for your service. And I want to thank you so much. And I have to tell you that that A-N-N-E is like the only way, really, to spell Ann. Anyway, I love your voice. You are so calm and inviting, and it really drew me to what you were saying. Excuse me. So my question is, you had talked about 6 and 7. The first time you wrote all of your defects down, or I don't like the word defects, your character traits that you didn't like. You only had a few. Well, the first 4 steps I did, I had about 120 things I had done wrong in my life. And then she said, no, that's not exactly how you're supposed to do it. You don't just make a list of all. Okay. So anyway, since you only had a few, was there a time in your recovery that you did find more, and did you do more 4 steps on them?
Oh, that's a good... Well, see, my defects are pretty clear. Like, they're pretty big. They're in my face all the time. And, but what's happening is God is doing a whittling job on me. Like a piece of lumber, right? It started off like a log, and now I think I'm down to maybe the size of a stick you throw to a dog in terms of, not that my defects are that reduced, but just simply that my identifying them right away is much faster. And then, like, again, the 6 and 7 would be, I've done 1 4-step since I've completed the last set of 12 that I did, and it was around fear, around a particular situation. And it was very quick. It was very direct, very honest. You know, like, it was just sort of needed to be done so I could get it straight in my head. But now that I'm talking about this, an idea just came to me about how one of the fellows in a workshop that I take talked about how you can do a 10-step before an event. So I've started to do that. And so like if I have an event that I'm going into that I have certain feelings about, I will do a 10-step about where I'm at and look at options and things. So that by the time I get to wherever I'm going and whatever I'm dealing with is no longer needs and requires an 10-step. There's no amends needed. Nothing happens. It's just simply that kind of cleared the way that what I most feared was not going to happen. And so, yeah, that's a 10-step, but I have the event that I fear the most hasn't happened yet. So, you know, it was one of those. So, I don't know. Does that answer your question, Henrietta? I don't know. Does it?
Thank you. Beautiful. Me.
Okay.
Thank you. I may call you. We'll talk about it.
Oh, wonderful. I'd love to hear from you. And anybody else that wants to call me, I will call you back. Text or call. I will get back to you.
Yeah, we'll get Ann's contact information, her phone and all that after the recorded hour. But we have plenty of time. If there are more questions, press star one. Give me your first name. Any other questions for Ann?
Jane F., New Hampshire.
Hey, Jane, I got you down. Who else? Anybody?
Maura Z.
Maura.
Anybody
Hi, Kathleen.
Else?
I heard Kathleen.
Marisa G.
And Marisa, right?
Marisa G, yes. Thank you.
Okay, Marisa. Jane, Maura, Kathleen, Marisa. Anybody else?
Leah J.
We got you, Leah. All right. Well, if there's nobody else, we'll start with this group. We've got Jane, Maura, Kathleen, Marisa, and Leah. Jane, what question do you have for Ann this morning?
Well, good morning. My name is Jane, and I'm just very grateful to be here. Thank you for your service, Larry, and thank you for your share, Ann. That was just beautiful. I resonated with so much, but the part that really hit me was when you talked about volumes. And if you could just maybe expound a little bit more. You said something about what you did with that. I think took it to a first step and then maybe a deeper surrender. How did that manifest for you, and how does it continue to manifest, and, you know, what changed? If you could talk about that, would be wonderful.
Sure. I'd be very happy to. I find that when I'm sponsoring, that I focus just as much time and attention on food-related behaviors as I do on alcoholic foods. The reason for that is that if you are driving and you see a yellow light, you know it's time to stop. Whereas if you don't know what the signals are in that pre-lapse period, you know yourself well enough, you can't spot it. And so you can be, I don't know, through the stoplight into the intersection before you know it, and it could have been avoided. So I see volumizing as something where you've agreed, specifically for myself, is that I've committed to certain volumes of certain foods that are my menu plan that I give to my sponsor. And anything over or under that is, I consider that as something that's reportable to my sponsor. And I also see it as a big red flag. Because in my experience, I had gone back into the disease in some way because of my anxiety level, my behaviors. I could just see it. I mean, all the things people were talking about in meetings about how disordered their lives were before they, you know, put down the food, it just hit me that, oh my gosh, I'm just inches away from going back. And for somebody to be in the wasteland of compulsively overeating and destroying themselves for 15 years, that was not going to be an option. So when I did the step one, I just knew that if I went back to step one and made that commitment again and recognized what the volumizing was that I had gone back, you know, like this was something that was dysfunctioning in the food, and turned my life over. And this was like just saying that and reading the step and making that commitment and then making that decision. Just, I'm not going to do this anymore. That was the key. And I think it's because it was that foundation of making that decision about
no alcoholic foods ever. I mean, it was a commitment that I made, not to myself, I made it to God. And I think that was the key, is again, it's sort of like make that commitment to God. No volumizing, no over or under what I'm reporting. And that when it does happen and it doesn't, you know, but what was interesting at that time is that when I did that, all these other food related behaviors started to percolate out, which was shocking to me. Things like, I don't know, I was making something in the oven and opened the oven and actually took something off the oven shelf, not weighted and measured, and ate it. And to try, and I explained to my sponsor at the time that I had never seen, I'd never done this before. Well, you kind of, when somebody hears that, you think, yeah, right, you've never done it before. But I hadn't, that I was able to remember. Because for me, a lot of my memory, I have only now been able to access certain memories going back that I never was able to access before. So there's a lot of stuff that's still percolating out for me, but I'm not acting out on the food when it does percolate out because I've got the steps and I'm doing 10, 11, and 12.
All right. Thanks so much, Jane. Appreciate that. Okay. Next up, we have Maura followed by Kathleen. Maura, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks so much for your service this morning. And thank you so much for your presentation. It was just so centered and so clear, and I really appreciate that. I have a question about 10 steps. I find myself being in a place where I'm not doing them because I'm thinking I don't need to. And I'm just wondering, have you ever gone through a period of time that you experienced that, and what did you do to wake up? Because I'm thinking, I'm not perfect, so I should be dealing with some of these things. But I find that as they come up during the day, I'm able to take them to them and let them go. And I'm just wondering if you had any experience to share on that. Thank you.
Oh, it's another lovely question. Thank you, Maura. I have gone through a period that you described. And I find that when I ask a sponsee to do 10 steps, I got to do the same thing. And for me, there's like, if something comes up for me like a disturbance, and I give it over to God, and that disturbance comes back on me, that means that I need to do a 10th step. So I've made it in, for me, a disturbance would be something that is out of my control. And if I give that to God and it's not enough, I can see right away that I got to do more, and that's when I'll do a 10. But in terms of that peace between the motivation, is that my understanding, again, and this again goes back to that agitation or that disturbance, I know is kind of like a prelapse. It's not the relapse, it's a prelapse. Like, in other words, that irritation is like a little seed. And if that little seed, sometimes for me, is I'll have something happen and I'll just fluff it off. But 3 days later, it's back in my face. That's a 10th step. Because it means that something was in that there was a disturbance that I minimized. And at the time, or was too not wanting to address it, one of those two. So that's the motivator for me, is first of all, to be a person that if I ask somebody to make outreach calls, if I ask somebody to do 10 steps, if I ask somebody to be a sponsor, that's sponsee, I need to be doing the work myself. Otherwise, I'm not staying healthy.
Thanks, Maura. Okay, next up we have Kathleen, followed by Maurisha. Kathleen, good morning.
Hi, good morning. This is Kathleen in the Chicagoland area, and thank you, everyone, for these wonderful meetings, and thank you for taking us through these 12 steps. That was wonderful and so peaceful for me. My question is specifically about the third step and how that's the step I'm on, and I've written out my third step in the form of a surrender. How do you help or walk somebody through the third step specifically? And then how would you help somebody who, like myself, doesn't necessarily can't define God or doesn't know yet, right? But wants to keep moving. So I think that's my question, how you do a third step with sponsees.
Oh, okay. Well, third step with a sponsee is usually because it's the work that's done in step one and two. Because if the step the work is done in step one and two, the third step is you're not expected in the third step, it's you're not expected to have that total. You just have to hope that there's a God. Or because other people say there's a God, you can say, okay, I don't believe it yet because I don't see it in my life, but let me just go, let me just do as if. It's kind of like an as if. And, you know, kind of like the, you have a money back guarantee. There's no downside to, I'll act as if I'm giving everything over to God. And gradually, because I have faith in God, that knowing God the way that I do is that when I personally have sought Him, He's been there. And it's like what shape that is can be different shapes. That shape of God can be, well, like I said, some people see it as a doorknob, not for me. But for you, it might be some people that I've heard here speak, they will use it as like a geographical location, like a mountain or a lake, something that gives them peace, a sense of peace. And that gradually, as you identify more and more, because that's part of the work of going through the steps, because God is in every step. And as there's a revealing of each step that we go through, God is revealing more of Himself to you or us, as well as you're revealing more of yourself to Him. He already knows who we are. But there's something about us actually telling God, this is who I am, and change me. There's something about that where when we've got that insight and we bring God into that that place and just ask. What I did was when I got abstinence, I prepared my house, got everything all organized, and all abstinent food, had surfed out all my alcoholic foods. Took about, I don't know, 2 weeks or whatever to do that. And then every morning when I would wake up, I would just say, Jesus, I'm not saying you have to do that, but just waking up, it was like, I would like to be abstinent. Please give me abstinence. So in terms of what your question is around step three, it's very specific. It says thy way of life. It's God's way of life. So what you're on is God is already present. He's already there in this step for you. You don't have to worry about if you're not feeling anything. If you were doing step 12 and you didn't have any kind of opening from God or had a better understanding of who your higher power was, because it's really about higher power here, that would be a concern. But in step 3, you're just hearing about it. You're just acknowledging who it is. And one of the things that one of my sponsors had me do was to do like with colored pencils, actually, is what I did. Is I made took a sheet of paper and wrote down all the things that I wanted for myself and who I wanted God to be. And there might be some answer for you in that. Yeah, Maura.
Thanks so much, Maura. Okay, now we have, or excuse me, that was Kathleen.
Sorry, Kathleen.
We have Marisha followed by Leah. Marisha, good morning to you.
Thank you very much. My question, I think, was answered. However, I love the idea of you talking about construction and reconstruction. My question has to do with surrender. I seem to be in a little quagmire with my idealism of surrender, and I'm wondering what insight you could give me. Surrender for me makes me feel like I'm giving up on my disease, and I don't want to do that. How can I soften the idea of surrender and still continue with the 12 steps. Thank you very much. I really appreciate your information, Anne.
Oh, you're welcome, Arisha. Thank you for your question. I think surrender is, you've got to look at surrender as you're surrendering to God. Don't surrendering the food, I think that was your question, like the surrender. It's kind of like there's a trust that goes on there. And I find that there's still some places within me that God is actually asking me to pull out more of that trust. And that isn't like, it depends, like if this is the first time you're doing that, that can be, that journey took me about 10, maybe 15, maybe 20 years. Because there's a very strong, when we're born, we have a very strong, I did anyway, we have a lot of rebellion in us. We want things our way. And to hand that over to something that we can't see, that we've only heard about, it's a walk unto itself. And, you know, like it's when you, for me, when I surrender something, for many years, I would surrender something to God and then I would take it back. And that's where the struggle was for me, was that I saw myself as being better than, or bigger and better than God. And I knew better. So, does it still happen? When I catch myself, and that's where 10 steps come in, at 11th, like nightly review, is I see it. Like I'll see, oh, you know, you got your own agenda running here. And but then immediately take that to God and say, you know, no, this is who it should be. But you're the one, God, that this is, should be making the decision here, and I just walk away. But if I keep pulling it back into my will, because it's surrender of will. So it's not so much surrendering, like it's not giving up on your abstinence or giving up on your food. It's really about identifying what your alcoholic foods are. I think this, hopefully this is what the direction you were going in, is that you have to accept that your body may have been able to eat those foods at one point and has now gone into what they call the progression of the disease. So our bodies are like roadmaps of our disease, in that a food that we used to eat with no trouble, now the body is saying, no, this, you've got the allergy here too now. And that's, as you age, you're going to see that even more and more. That's been my experience, is that the progression of the disease keeps marching on. And so even as recently as, I don't know, a month, 2 months ago, I had to do a surrender around certain foods, not because they had become alcoholic, but because they were no longer, my body was saying, no, these are foods that we are no longer going to have, because you abused your body so much that and you're aging, and now we're complaining. No, it's not going to happen. So you, again, thank goodness, thank you, God, for the 12 steps to be able to give up those foods that are not alcoholic, but are not, no longer safe for me to have because my body is rejecting them. Hope that answers your question.
Yeah, thank you so much for that question, Marisha. And our final question comes from Leah. Leah, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for this wonderful share and meeting. You know, I think my question has been answered, but as I've been listening, another one has come up. Is it was about the volumizing and how you did that. That was super insightful. I took a lot out of that. And now, too, about what the surrender looks like. But what I have noticed is that I am getting back on track from quite a bad relapse in 2024. It took me a while to come out of it. But what I'm wondering is that whole quagmire of surrender, is that there's some fear there, because I was locked in this kind of abusive relationship pattern. I'm coming out of that, but did you seek outside help for some of that, or did the steps work for you? Can you talk a little bit about that? Thank you.
Oh, what? Thank you for the question, Leah. It's quite a big question, actually. I could probably do a whole podcast on that one. So I think I think for me, the surrender was, like I said, over many years, and it was over many stages. Like, surrender was like, first of all, weighing and measuring. And the weighing and measuring was a one that it was like a stumbling block. But when I spoke to somebody, there was a different fellowship, they were out of San Francisco. They persuaded me to spend the money to buy an electronic scale. And at that time, they just came out. That electronic scale, she said to me, she said, when you buy the electronic scale, it's going to save your life. It was $125, and that was a lot of money for me at the time. But you know what? She was right. It did save my life because I surrendered to what somebody had said that I needed to do. I was terribly resistant to the idea, but I realized that if I was serious, because there's a gift of desperation that settles in on us, right? And that gift of desperation is to go to any length. So when you hear people in meetings saying going to any length, that's part of it. So in your surrendering, the struggle might be something that if you can ask God, this is how I would do it, is I would ask God to help you identify what part of you needs to still surrender. And he will answer. So you have to go to God in prayer, surrender to him, and listen and hear what he has to say back to you. Because you may not like the answer. Because I didn't like the answer for many, many years and just kept going, you know. So, and in terms of the volumizing, that's part of it, is that recognize it that this is part, for me, volumizing, I consider it an alcoholic behavior. And I consider my abstinence not volumizing. So I made it, that's how I integrated it. I said, okay, these are my alcoholic foods. Part of my recovery, my food-related behaviors such as volumizing are part of my abstinence. So for me, when I'm doing my reporting, I'm reporting to my sponsor that, you know, food-related behaviors, volumizing, no, that's my abstinence. And if I act out, I report that because it is breaking my abstinence. And that means that it's a dangerous place to be. So I'm really invested in making sure I don't volumize. So I hope that answers.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that. And Leah, thanks for the question. And thank you to everybody that was here this morning and participated, and even if you're just listening, and a special, special thank you to Anne SCH from British Columbia, Canada. And thank you for your presentation this morning. It was beautiful. So let me give you the share ID again for the presentation this morning. That number is 23,304. That's 23304. And so we're going to stick around at the end of the recorded portion. We'll ask Anne for her contact information, but we're going to close this morning from a reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous on page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation, which you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until...